Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. Today we're going to be talking about family legacy, and how sometimes the story of a person within a family ends up being a very powerful one and having an influence because of a legacy that is discovered that they inadvertently leave, that someone else in the family, a few generations away from them, discovers and said, ah, we've got to write about this because it is a part of history. It's a part of time. And if any of you have ever decided to do family genealogy, you know how very, very intensive that can be. And this is what my guest today, Robert Wright, has done. He's written a book titled Rugged Mercy. And it is about, well, his grandfather. That's right. And his grandfather was not just an incredible man, but the links in the aspect of connection to certain periods of history between Idaho and some other places, it's really a fascinating read. I want to welcome to the show Robert Wright. Robert, so glad to have you with me today.
Well, thank you.
Robert, all of us have genealogy, obviously, that we can research and identify. You wrote about your granddad. What was it that spurred you to do this? Did you want to find out about some infamous happening that maybe you had heard about in the family? I've got a girlfriend that... she's got some relative that was the one female that was hung during the Civil War. So all of us have something in our family background. What was it about your
granddad? That's true. Everybody's certainly got a story. And that was part of it, but these stories from the time as early as I can remember would filter in from my grandfather and grandmother. And at the time, from an early stage, I didn't pay much attention to it. I was too busy watching the stories of the heroes on TV, Have Gun, Will Travel, Gunsmoke, not even realizing that within my own family was the story of a real hero.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I just always wanted to write about. There were some hidden mysteries that my grandmother wouldn't talk about, the mysterious picture on the wall of the little girl with the blonde hair, and my Aunt Jean, that there was never an adult Aunt Jean, yet everybody told stories about Aunt Jean. So these were mysteries that I wanted to explore.
Now, you in 1978 had the opportunity to sit down with your grandmother. How old was she at that time?
She was probably in her 90s. Oh, gosh, she was born. I'd have to do the math. She was born in 1884.
Wow.
I just didn't want to lose these stories. There's also a tape on file at the Ketchum Public Library, an oral history tape of my grandmother, and that has many of the stories on that that I wrote about. But there was so much that I wanted to capture. Feelings and emotions and specifics. Even then, I couldn't get the medical specifics, and I was able to get the help from Dr. Jim Wharton. Were you able to get him on the line? Or
no, I'm sorry, I wasn't able to do that. But let's take a step back just here, because you did utilize Dr. Jim, and we'll take a break and see if we can call him. I don't have his number in front of me at this time. But what I wanted to do was to say you really went into a lot of research on the past. And you found that linking up with people that had medical background, because your granddad was a doctor. And we see programs like Little House on the Prairie and Old Doc and his horse and buggy. And I knew a doctor once who did exactly what the doc on Little House on the Prairie did with horse and buggy. And when I knew the doctor, he was in his 80s, in his 80s. And he was still practicing. He was still delivering babies because that was his business. And the stories, a few of the stories that he shared with me just blew me away about what women had to do in the South, because that's originally where he started his practice. And with your granddad, he decided that he was going to be a doctor. What was the circumstance that promoted that concept and that idea for him? Because originally he was just a kid. What did he do?
That's chapter one. And, you know, I forget who said it now, that truth is stranger than fiction, but when he was probably 12 years old, peering through a window, watching an appendectomy, wondering what was going on, and he actually ended up assisting in the appendectomy, and that changed his life.
Mm-hmm. It was a Dr. Durham,
yeah,
I believe.
Dr. Durham, one of the strangest characters of history. This was a time when medicine was beginning its emergence from superstition and magic, when the facts coming forth in themselves seemed mythical. And this was a guy that was half snake oil salesman, half surgeon, brilliant man, but just an amazing character. He'd have his sideshows. He'd be selling his little bottles of medicinal whatever that was probably made from whiskey and syrup, had no medicinal value whatever, but he was still a brilliant surgeon.
He was, and he had an attitude. Being the man that he was, and like you said, he was brilliant, he said, as far as the snake oil stuff that he sold, he wasn't too concerned about it because it wasn't going to cause anybody any harm. He said, it doesn't always work, and I'm quoting from your book, but when it does, I suspect it's because it goes to work on your mind. It's
yeah,
in
that's
here.
Right. He was a believer in the mind's power to heal, and my grandfather carried that into his practice, and he was avant-garde in the sense that he believed in the mind's power to heal. And when he couldn't do it, sometimes he would give the patients enough confidence to where they would actually, as strange as it sounds, heal themselves.
Mm-hmm. I know one of the stories you have about Dr. Durham is he had been arrested for boring a hole in a man's head. And he had determined, as a doctor, that this individual had mastoiditis, and he actually drained two cups full of pus out of his head. Now, that sounds really gross.
I was
sure it was. But that's an incredible story.
Yeah, and it's true. And, you know, funny thing, the publisher, it's a scholarly press, it's WSU Press, and they made me document every single thing that I wrote about, and they put that in the notes section and back.
Mm-hmm.
And
that is really something. Now, your granddad was quite a character in his own way, and when he met your grandmother, he was so afraid she was going to get away from him that he actually bluffed her, didn't he?
Yeah, that's funny. She told the story that he wrote her a letter and said, if you don't marry me right now, I've met a girl. He was back, and he just graduated from medical school in St. Louis. And he said, if you don't marry me right now, I've met a girl back here in St. Louis. And if you don't marry me right now, I'm going to stay here and marry her. And she, when she'd tell the story, she'd chuckle and she'd say, why, I had half a mind to say no. But there was never any girl. I read every single one of his love letters that she saved, by the way, that I still have all tied up in a little pink ribbon. And there was never another woman. He, he was worried about her slipping away. She was the one that was getting nervous. And
now, she got a college education, didn't she?
Yes, yes. She graduated from the in Salt Lake City in music from the Collegiate Institute. So she was a smart lady too. And you know, the funny thing is this was an example of really an ideal marriage that showed the power of a woman, the power of a man, and unified together, they'd become stronger than the individual parts.
He had, as a physician, and I think it's very difficult for people to have an identity with this in our world, that we think doctors have to be superhuman, and nobody should ever die. This is something that in the psyche of the modern environment, it's very difficult to deal with these realities. Now, he is a young doctor. He had lost two patients. It was a mother and her baby. And
that
it was in the birthing
patient process.
And most babies, good 50% or more, not all that long ago, they died because of infection. There was childbed fever. There was all kinds of things. Now, when he was trained as a physician, he knew how important it was to keep the hands clean and all of this. But his first two patients, he lost those two patients, and it was devastating to him.
Devastated him. He almost drove him out of his career. He almost went back to farming because of it.
Mm-hmm. And
he didn't,
that
because of the power of the wife.
Something that people don't realize.
Yeah. Well, this was a placenta previa birth, and even today, under modern hospital settings, that's a very dangerous situation, where the placenta detaches from the uterus and blocks the baby's entrance into the birth canal, and literally, oxygenated blood is not being channeled to the child, and they literally suffocate within the womb. And he knew that, and he just didn't get there in time with the first two patients, and he redeemed himself, of course, with the journey by dog team through a midnight blinding blizzard, if you can imagine. Took him 6 hours to get there up to the head of Warm Springs Canyon. Got there, the very same situation, the placenta previa birth, got there just in time to save both mother and child.
In fact, he was known as a physician for his patients surviving. And the extenuating circumstances, the blizzard, didn't make any difference. And Dot, his wife, just said, this is what you have to do. She was totally supportive. She often was in the very same environment with him.
In fact, in many, after the children got to be a little bit older, she would go with him on all of his cases and assist him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was very important. And I think when we can understand what it took, people often were located in these outlying areas. They didn't have emergency rooms conveniently located. The doctors had to go from wherever they were. They were on call 24 hours a day. I mean, that was just the facts. You had to be out there. And the story, as you tell it, you feel like you're right there with the doc when he's going out doing things. And I just found it so much fun, the little bits of humor and various stories that you would tell. For example, about how when your dad would say, you know, you'd ask him, do you want to go to heaven? And he said, nope, you can't stand harp music. I mean, that just...
I just love this. He'd be sitting there reading his novel, and we could never get him to dress up in his one suit and go to church. And I says, Dad, don't you want to go to heaven? Nope, can't stand harp music.
That's right. Now, they ended up moving to Sun Valley. Now, Sun Valley today people identify as a resort. They have for a number of years, but it wasn't always that way. Why was Idaho chosen by them? And this was when?
It was where they both grew up. It was where he peered through that window and saw Dr. Durham doing the surgery in 1894. It was before it was Sun Valley in the late 1800s and early 1900s. It was called the Idaho Gold Belt, and consisted of five towns: Ketchum, Haley, Muldoon, Broadford, Bellevue, Bullion. And after the Depression, after World War One, it virtually withered away from its affluence to just a series of ghost towns, and was saved by the Union Pacific when they came in and bought the Brass Ranch, and everybody thought they were crazy, building a 220-room fancy European hotel in the middle of nowhere on a Depression-ravaged ranch that was going under. Paid $10 an acre for it, and that's what we know today as Sun Valley.
Incredible.
And they invented the chairlift, by the way.
Wow. And, you know, it's really wonderful history. You've got so much of this, and when you think about it, it's in a relatively small, compact period of time that all of these changes evolved. And I love the story about the use of the dog sled, because that's what your granddad had to use sometimes during winter. And you have a wonderful, wonderful story about a man named Leif, or Leif, and it was his dog that ended up saving a woman's life who was in the process of giving birth.
Yeah, that's right. Good old Jake, and good old Jake ended up as his faithful companion until Jake died, 10, 15 years later.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that with your granddad, he just said, because of what Jake had accomplished, Jake was the lead dog in the dog team.
Half wolf, half lab.
Yes, and just absolutely, absolutely amazing. And Mary was the woman that he was going to see, and it was the same situation, exactly the same situation, just as you mentioned a moment ago, where he had lost a mother and child before. And that had really had
redemption.
An effect on him, because he was known to be especially skilled with mothers, with their babies, with kids. He just absolutely was phenomenal. And it never got old for him. He always was amazed at the process of life that would come through, regardless of the difficulty. And his skill was just incredible. And he kept going back to school. He'd go back to the Mayo Clinic, wouldn't he, to get the training and education.
And I've got his diploma framed at home from the Mayo Clinic in the diseases of children.
Mm-hmm.
So that was his postgraduate work. Today, I suppose he would be known as an OBGYN, although he, in those days, they didn't specialize. And, you know, he did everything from sewed a man's toe back on to delivering babies to removing ovarian cysts, whatever needed to be done. And oftentimes, these country doctors developed procedures before they'd been invented by the profession.
Absolutely, because many times they had to do stuff on a kitchen table, whatever was available. Wherever they could possibly lay somebody out so that could do what was required, because these people would be out in the fields working, whatever, and they just worked in the environments. And what is so amazing to me is how many of them survived. They should have died, a lot of them, but they didn't. They survived.
Yeah.
They seemed to have this genetic package of stamina and strength. A lot didn't. But diphtheria, smallpox, typhus.
And then the big one in Idaho was Rocky Mountain spotted fever.
Ah, that's right. That's the other one that really hit hard. And what was his remedy for that?
Well, there really wasn't a cure. The spotted fever vaccine wasn't developed until, I think, probably 1919. And so he would simply watch and wait and converse and until it either died or it passed on its own. And in one case, which is chronicled in the book, he believes he actually saved the young child's life again with the power of the mind.
And tell us how he did that.
Well, he talked to the child. The child was, I forget now, 18 months old, almost 2 years old. He talked to the child. The child was Basque. He had a translator. The Basque people in those days could speak very little English. And so he had, you know, Juanita was her name. And he talked to the child and told her that she was going to get better, promised her that he would stay by her bedside until she did get better. Then something horrific happened. The spots turned purple and ulcerated, and whenever that happened, the patient always died. But he didn't say anything. He just kept talking to the child. Child stiffened up, closed its eyes, and was gone. But then something happened, and child opened its eyes. The child started giggling and laughing, and it was absolutely a miracle. High in the mountains of Idaho, an absolute miracle, because there was no medical cure for it.
Mm-hmm. And eventually there was a vaccine.
Eventually there was.
Yeah, that was developed. And he kept going back to school. Now, one of the things that occurred with a lot of the country doctors at that time, they felt many times they couldn't leave their practice. They didn't have someone to take care of their patients, and they were busy all the time. There was always somebody who was having a problem somewhere, a child, an adult, accidents, you know, just various things. But he did, and he kept on going and advancing his education. But interestingly, among the individuals in the environment, the old country doctors were the ones that people had the most faith in, because they had been with them through so many various situations. They often didn't want to have anything to do with the new docs. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And it was the new doctors who were availing themselves of the education and the information that was just falling out of the sky. New developments, new discoveries. It was the old country doctors that resisted the education. And ironically, those were the ones that the people had the most faith in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the new young guys like my grandfather that really had the knowledge.
Well, your granddad did something that the other doctors and most people didn't do. And it really made a difference with him. The biggest challenge he had was time. For him to get from, let's say, his office, where he was doing his practice, to wherever somebody might be, was really a challenge. You could take a horse, you could use a horse and buggy, but automobiles had come about. And he invested in an EMF Studebaker. And what I found so amazing is that they didn't have indoor plumbing in their house. Electricity had come there, but they chose to put their money, which was a tremendous amount for that time frame, $729, into that vehicle. And you've got photos in here of your granddad and Dot and the children, and he chose to put the money into that rather than getting indoor plumbing in the house, because it was going to speed up his effectiveness of being able to reach his patients. Even though they may not have the best roads, that's what he chose to do. He was really far-sighted in the way that he thought and the way that he did things.
And oftentimes he'd take his payment, a sack of potatoes, or nothing more than a hot meal at the end of the procedure.
Mm-hmm. And you've got a quote in your book, "The measure of a man is the way he lives his life, not the shape of his eyes or the language he speaks." This is a very important quote, because at this time, when your granddad was there, there was a severe discrimination against the Chinese. The Chinese had been brought in to work on railroads, to do a lot of things, and there was more discrimination against the Chinese at that time than the black people, correct?
That's right, and old Fat, who owned a restaurant in town, was probably his best friend. He'd stopped in and have Fat fry him up a steak after one of the all-night procedures, and they'd talk about their different cultures and developed a very, very close bond.
Your granddad's involvement with the Basque people was amazing to me, because these people many times were so isolated and they were looked down upon by others. Do Basque still live in Idaho?
Oh, definitely. And there's no longer any discrimination against them, though. They, one of my best friends in high school, a fellow named Mike Ubarago, who was an amazing ski racer during the 60s, was a descendant of that Basque generation.
Mm-hmm. You also talked about your granddad's relationship with a father, a Rigui. I don't know that that's the correct pronunciation, but this is...
Oh, Father Ariagi? I can't pronounce his name either. I can't remember how my grandmother pronounced it, but I believe it was Ariagi, Father Ariagi.
Tell us the story about Father Ariagi and how he chose you to, or not you, your granddad, to assist with a very, very difficult situation. And it involved the Basque.
Well, that was the story I was telling you about the little, it was the Rocky Mountain spotted fever epidemic and the little child.
Mm-hmm.
Father Ariagi was a Basque priest that was sent from Spain by the Bishop of Vitoria at the request of the Boise Diocese to minister to the herders, the Basque sheep herders in Idaho. And this was a man who didn't look at all like a priest. He had a little red beret and this big knife on his belt that was purely for cutting firewood and draining snake bites, but it was this huge, intimidating knife. And my grandfather and Father Ariagi were close friends, and they traveled together, along with another doctor from Idaho that was mentored by my grandfather. They traveled together and helped these spotted fever victims. It was Dr. Fox. There were actually half a dozen doctors at that time because the area was so big down in southern Idaho, in
mm-hmm.
the Gold Belt region.
You have a touching story in here that I think displays a wisdom about Lawnmower Joe. Who was he, and what was the lesson
learned? Lawnmower Joe. Oh, man. He was this aging simpleton, this man who the kids would tease and throw rocks at and clumps of dirt. He'd push his old rusty lawnmower from job to job, we'd tease him, and he'd run after us. It was like a dog chasing ducks on the wing. There was no way he could catch us, but Lord knows what he would have done to us, probably nothing. I don't know. One day, I learned something from my dad. Took me to an Indian powwow and down in Pocatello, and the Indians had this enormous respect for old people. And that hit me, a quote from, I believe it was Sarah Winnebago, Sarah, what was her name? Forget now, but a famous Indian lady, Winnemucca, Sarah Winnemucca. That if you make fun of somebody, you at that point become lower than the person you're making fun of.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about Lawnmower Joe, and I didn't throw any of the rocks, but neither did he do anything to stop it. And if I could turn time back, I'd somehow fix it, even though the
mm-hmm.
boys were bigger than me, and I would have stood up for him, but I didn't, and I still regret it.
You have a fabulous story in here about Gene and Glenn and how they found an old cougar. And this story just really touched my heart because people are terrified of cougars. And this is something, there's a very special story about a dream regarding the cougar and how Gene and Glenn fed this cougar so that it wouldn't die. They had developed a very, very special bond with it. And it's touching. You have so many wonderful stories in here in the book Rugged Mercy about your granddad, the people that were with him, the Nazi that was part of the coming together of Sun Valley as a resort. There's just so much here. It's just amazing.
Well, thank you.
Now, this must have been absolutely a joy for you to put together. How many years did it take you to get all of the details, the documentation on the medical side, to put all of this together? Because as you said,
it was a 20-year project. And I consulted. I remember poor Dr. Anita Connell. Her husband was a friend of mine, and I called her up at midnight because I was in a zone. She's an OBGYN, and I was doing the placenta previa case, and so I was mind. I didn't even think about the time, and I called Ray up at midnight and said, "Hey, can I talk to your wife?" And he put her on, and God bless her, she spent 45 minutes telling me in detail of how that would have happened in a placenta previa birth, of how he would have been able to save the child.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got to give her credit for that. But no, it's a tremendous amount of research.
Just, it's fabulous. All kinds of points of information. And more than anything else, if you've watched Little House on the Prairie or watched any of the old programs where they've made these depictions, this is the real stuff. Rugged Mercy really allows you to feel what was going on at that time. It's about a country doctor in Idaho's Sun Valley. This is the grandson, Robert Wright, who took 20 years to compile all of the details and information. It makes for an awesome read. So if you want to add something to your reading list, consider Rugged Mercy. It is a one-of-a-kind book, but wow, is it packed with all kinds of wonderful, wonderful stories, details, information about a time, well, I don't think we'll see the likes of it ever again, but wow, what a period. What a dynamic, dramatic period for this man, Robert Wright, to bring together, pull together, and it's all about his family. Robert, thanks ever so much for being my guest. It's been a delight. I know your website is coming on in about a week, ruggedmercy.com. So just make a note, and if you want to check it out, ruggedmercy.com will be up in about a week. Meanwhile, you can get this at bookstores. Thank you so much, Robert, for being my guest.
Thank you, Donna.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a minute. Don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I'm so delighted that you were able to join me today. Telephone number to call in if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And by the way, tomorrow we are going to have an open mic day. The author Beverly Flaxton that we were going to have on tomorrow, she had something come up, so we are going to have an entire hour that you will be able to chat with me, if you so desire. On Wednesday, Running Your Own Corporation, Garrett Sutton. Boy, this is a powerful book. If you are someone that perhaps is a sole proprietor, if you have an LLC, maybe you're interested in becoming a corporation, a C corporation, an S corporation, Garrett's got some real down-to-earth information that, especially in the changing economic climate that we are seeing, could really benefit you big time. So we'll be talking with him on Wednesday. Ready for pre-retirement. Yes, I don't care what your age is. You are going to want to look at a time when you perhaps will have the economics, for whatever reasons. You may not choose to work. You may choose to work, but you're going to have something for those maturing years so that you can have a lifestyle that you're comfortable with. So Chris Miller is going to be my guest, and then Milt Larson. This is all about magic. The Magic Castle in Hollywood, California. Wow, what a history and what a life Milt has led. So we'll be talking with him on Friday. So we've got a dynamic lineup. Be sure to tell your friends about it. And I invite you to join me here on the Donna Sebo Show, because it's very eclectic, whether we're talking about true real life history that is a part of someone's life, being aware of upcoming changes, finances, food. We have all kinds of details and points of information that we like to share with you on the Donna Sebo Show. So be sure to put it as a part of your programming and regimen. You can always check for show information under that show button about the guests that are upcoming. Economics. Well, I think everybody in general, unless you're a multi-billionaire, and even then, I think you pay attention to what your costs are. What kind of items are you going to spend your money on? Maybe you've had a failure with an appliance. Maybe you want some piece of electronic technology, and every time you look at the price tag, you just go, ouch, how am I going to do this? I'm just not in a position to afford it. Well, here are some tips that I came across that I thought would be good to share. This is something that I think is important. When you learn of a better way of doing something, a more economical way of doing something, and you can pass that along to someone else, that is always a real positive thing to do. Smartphones. Well, do you know that there are refurbished items? And I came across this information, and I thought, all right, here we go. How can you manage to get one of these? Smartphones are wonderful. I'm looking at one myself, and when I've heard the prices on these things, I go, wow, is it economically going to be viable for me to have? Well, it is becoming a tool that's going to be so useful. I have a friend that she travels in Europe, and she said, I don't even carry a PC with me anymore because my smartphone, I can keep in touch with business, anything else that I need to do via this handheld apparatus. So you can get the latest smartphone for next to nothing, sometimes even free. Now, this is a long URL, but I want you to know that you can go to AT&T.com/shop/wireless/devices/refurbishedphones.html. That's right. AT&T.com/shop/wireless/devices/refurbishedphones.html. Also, T-Mobile has something. T-Mobile.com/shop/phones. Sprint has some. Sprint.com/pre-owned and VerizonWireless.com/pre-owned.shtml. Now, you will have to sign a contract, and you can choose from recent refurbished returns or pre-owned phones. So you will be able to get one for a lot less than what you've even imagined. Same goes for computers. Now, the refurbished laptops, desktops, and tablets really go through a lot of testing, so they are sure that they will work like brand new machines. You can go to manufacturers' websites such as Dell, Apple, HP, and you know, find out about the refurbished items. You will make sure, if you do that, you will be making sure that you are actually going to get those products from those recognized companies that will stand behind what they do. Same thing for appliances. They have so many machines that people won't buy. Let's face it, if you're going to buy a brand new machine, you don't want any scratches, scuffs, dents, anything like that on it. So they will make sure that they are able to sell them. They don't want to have them around, so they sell them at half price. Sears Outlet and Best Buy. BestBuy.com and SearsOutlet.com. You can check both of those sites out if you're looking for appliances. Same goes for TVs and DVD players. Amazon.com, Overstock.com, and Walmart.com offer name brand items, and you can even get Blu-ray disc players 50% less than the original price. So it varies from retailer to retailer, but if you shop around, you might be able to get exactly what you want for yourself or maybe for the kids or what, you know, maybe you've got a friend that really needs some help, and you can assist them by sharing this information with them and save money to boot. I just think that that is a tremendous positive positioning to be in. And you always, I believe, will have the option. Thank you. You will always have the option to buy a warranty if you should so choose to do that. Let's go to our first caller for the day. And remember, if you want to give me a buzz, the telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. First name and initial. And where are you calling in from?
This is Teresa calling you from Glendale, Arizona.
Hi, Teresa. Glad to have you on the show. Teresa, the first thing that I am looking at here is a rethinking of strategy. You have been doing a pretty good job of peeling away some stuff that's unnecessary in your life. And it's been on multiple levels. And you're saying, all right, I've done this peeling away. I'm becoming more efficient. Now I need to look at how I want to go from here. And you have done this periodically, and sometimes you get upset with yourself because you found out that some of the agendas that you planned to work with, well, they weren't so efficient. But you're in a whole different state of mind and thinking processes at this time. The mistakes you've made in the past are really going to help you keep yourself on track for the present. So as I'm watching you, if you will allow yourself, maybe give yourself a week, and cloister yourself away someplace. If you like to go sit in a coffee shop somewhere or maybe a library where you're not going to have any interruptions, no phone calls, but you just sit down and really look at the objectives that you want and itemize out some of the steps that you can take. Then if you have someone you have a lot of confidence in, go and brainstorm with them. Go and brainstorm with them. Buy them a cup of coffee or something and say, okay, I'm looking at this. This is my strategy. How do you see it? And do that and give yourself a month window before you really start implementing action. You're going to be doing busy stuff anyway. But if you'll give yourself that kind of a time window, your restructuring will be so solid, it will be very simple, and you won't be tied up into all kinds of distractions. You'll be able to keep your focus. And one of the focuses I'm seeing with you is becoming involved with a particular group. Actually, I'm seeing two different groups, two different organizations that may take a day or two out of your entire month when you look at your time involvement with them. It might be the equivalent of like, 12 to 20 hours in the entire month. And you're going to say, this is really going to pay off for me. You're going to focus. This is really good. It is going to be such a positive step for you to take. But I think you are doing just such an incredibly good job at having come so far as you have and getting rid of the unnecessary. Just have patience with yourself because you're going into another restructuring pattern And I think you're really going to make some good choices, and you're going to have a very productive year. And that's not just on an emotional basis, but also on a financial basis. And I think you're going to be pleased with your progress. Now, Teresa, I know we're taking a break. Will you stay with me? And when we come back, I'll take your question.
Thank you.
You're welcome. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. To see more details, God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And I quickly want to say for those of you listening in Alaska, it looks like I am going to be up in Fairbanks from April the 30th through May the 3rd, and then I will be in Anchorage from May 3rd to May 6th. So all of that will be confirmed for sure, and I will be sending out a notice on that as well. Let's go back to Teresa in Glendale, Arizona. Teresa, what's your question for me, and thank you for being so patient and waiting.
Thank you. I have a presentation that I made at an organization a while back, and I'm hoping I presented to them a proposal to come in and make another one to a part of their organization. Do you see that going through?
I believe there's going to be another conversation. I believe that you are going to do another presentation. And what I would encourage you to do, because I'm seeing this on the table, it's not in an acceptance positioning yet. I'm seeing it on the table, and what I would encourage you to consider is asking them what their particular needs are and what is it that they would like to have more information about and get into some specifics. Because in the presentation, you did a good job of giving them a general overall picture. But there were some questions that came up, and I think it's between you and two other, companies. I'll use that as a description. And so you need to find out specifics, but you want to be prepared to have a small generalization in your presentation. Do not make the generalization as involved as you did the last time, but overall, and then go into specifics, being prepared to have more of a question-answer interaction with them. So you're really going to have to be prepared on the larger end, because obviously you're making the proposal, and don't be surprised if you're going to be given a couple of questions that you may not be able to give them exact parameters on. And I would say I would just not evade it and say, I'm going to put this question down. Will you give me a moment to reflect on it? And then you'll have the answer because you're so well-versed in what you're talking about. But I would suggest that you'd say to give you the specifics that you want in this particular content, on this particular content, then give me some time where I can get those numbers to you. I just don't have them in my head. And that will allow you to have that window of communication with them. Because there is someone that is very, very much into numbers, and they're focusing on the wrong aspect. They're not looking at certain things that they should be attentive to, but it's just the way they think. So that's what you need to be aware of, the different thinking processes that you're presenting to. And you want to not make anything so, how can I say it, black and white, that you don't give yourself some chance to really give them the in-depth detail that they may want. So that's very important to you. And I think that there's going to be another conversation with them. But you are in competition with apparently two other parties. So that's something you need to be aware of, but give them the best that you have addressing the specifics as they may be interested in having you address. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. So it's not showing that I'll be awarded the presentation. It's just showing.
They still have not made a decision. So if you are doing any kind of follow-up with them, and dependent on when the presentation was last done, if you have the opportunity to do a follow-up with someone, you may ask if there were specific areas that they would like to have some additional information on. And if they will give you their request, you will be happy to submit additional details to them if that was not satisfying. That will be up to you. You will have to make the choice. But I think that you are being given a very serious consideration. But it's not in the bucket yet.
Okay. Thank you.
You are very welcome, Teresa. This is Donna Sebo, and I know we just have a little bit of time left here. I do want to say give me a buzz, 888-627-6008, but the truth is I don't think we've got time where I can really chat with you. But tomorrow, hey, it's an open mic day, so the entire hour you'll be able to call in and chat with me. By the way, if ever you have the slumps when it comes to the spring weather here in the Pacific Northwest, we have so many days with gray skies, and it can really cause you to go into the blahs. So a tip, if you really want to get out of the blahs quickly, get out crayons or coloring pencils. I know it sounds a little wacky, but when you paint or when you draw, sort of go back into kindergarten mode, if you will. Play. Use color. Now, there's a term I'd never heard of. It's called Zen Tangle. Have you ever heard of it? I haven't. What it represents is doodling. That's right. Repetition is the art of Zen Tangling. When you draw squares within squares or spirals, circles, flowers, it helps to stabilize the mind. It actually causes a personality shift in the positive way. Use color. They've done some testing, and they have found when students do the Zen Tangles, when they're doing drawing, when they're using a color pencils or whatever, it just all of a sudden shifts the mind so that when students are taking tests later on, they do beautifully. Why? Because the brain has become relaxed. Why is it that it's so important for children to use colors and to color in coloring books or to do drawings? It helps the brain to develop its own creativity. Well, my goodness, anybody at any age can do the same thing. Draw. You may think all you can do is stick figures. Use colored pencils, crayons. Play with color. It changes the mood. By golly, you need to do it more in the Pacific Northwest. Donna Sebo here. It has been a delight sharing this time with you. Won't you join me tomorrow? We're going to have a lot of things to share. Odds and ends, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, maybe a recipe even thrown in to sweeten the mix. Donna Sebo here. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Have a magnificent day. Life is good. There's a lot to be grateful for. Count your blessings and expect even more. This is Donna Sebo. I'll be here same time, same place. Talk to you later. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.